some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's June 29th, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host. My co-host tonight is my good buddy, Ray Dieter. How are you, Ray?
Hey, Jimmy. I'm doing okay. Having a beer.
This is a great week. We made some beer yesterday at Six Point. We had a couple good beer seal owners. Jimmy's number 43, DBA. We had, I think, Spite and Dival. Did Joe come?
Joe did not
make it. He didn't show up, but Rattle and Hum did.
Rattle and Hum was there, that's right.
And we'll give a shout-out. We're supported by the Good Beer Seal, an association of good beer bars in New York City, goodbeerseal.com. We're getting ready for July Good Beer Month, which will kick off this weekend. Mayor Bloomberg is going to give us a proclamation that July is Good Beer Month. Is that kind of exciting for you, Ray?
I get shivers up and down my back.
Ray is the standing guy. Anytime you need to do anything with the mayor, good beer or anything, Ray will be there. He was dressed up in a G.I. Joe kind of a jumpsuit, at, you know, stirring mash at the Six Point Brewery. It was awesome.
I'm working hard for the beer, man. That's what I do.
And our special sponsor, it's greatbrewers.com. If you want to learn more about beer information and education, go to greatbrewers.com. Tonight we're going to have an option for call-ins. If you want to call in, 718-497-2128. Let's cut to the chase, our special guests. Ray, let's introduce your buddies, the brothers of beer, the real brothers of beer, Dan, Joel, and Will Shelton.
Hey, boys.
Hey.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
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 Whoops. You got to get closer to the mic, guys.
You can tell these guys, they're goofballs and they love their beer. Dan? How did you guys ever get started? This is the number one question. Why did you guys start importing beer?
Oh, geez. I've told that so many times it bores me, but I'll go ahead and do it again.
Make up something, Dan.
Yeah. That you're Ray, right?
I'm Ray.
That means that you're Tommy?
I'm Tommy.
Which one's clicking? Which one's clack? Oh, yeah? I'd get closer?
Talk closer, bro.
All right. Yeah, so this is Car Talk, right?
We're modeled after Car Talk. I know you like Car Talk. We could call the show Beer Talk, but it's Beer Sessions.
Oh, well, right, that's great, because actually, you know, my brother's making this really weird sound. How's that go? Oh.
Sounds like the World Cup.
What do you think is wrong with that?
Sounds like the World Cup. Well, guys, out there, if you don't know about the Shelton Brothers, do you guys have a website?
We do. It's called sheltonbrothers.com.
Sheltonbrothers.com.
How did you come up with that name, Dan?
You know,
it's
what?
Based on Shelton Brothers.
We hired a marketing consulting firm.
Oh, wow. You got the right guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So you guys like your beer. So is it true? So Joel, you're the first one that brought back Cantillon from Belgium. Tell me some stories, guys. Come
on,
open
I brought
up
it back.
To me.
I was on tour. I'm a musician. I play the Vuvuzela. I'll show you some right now. And I was over there in Belgium, and I discovered Cantillon.
You were the first person to ever drink Cantillon?
I think so, actually.
Nobody was drinking it before it was, you?
Yeah. I mean, but it was in the guidebook.
You have to point out at this stage that, you know, I'm the oldest brother, and they've always hated me since I was 5, so you can't believe anything they say.
So you're really brothers, all three of you.
Yeah, it's too bad people can't see how good-looking we are, too. But
you've all got faces for radio.
Yeah.
All right. So we got Joel who discovered Cantillon.
Let's not first part that.
Of it. So what's the story? I'm going to tell the story because I know it.
I'll tell the story. I brought it back. I brought
Cut
some
to
back
because
the beer was freakishly good, and I was the first person to ever drink it. And I brought it back to America, and I gave it to my brothers, and I think they didn't have an importer, and so Dan became an importer. That's pretty simple.
I can take over that story around that stage. Yeah, so my brother Joel, as he now claims, it's true. He did bring back bottles of Cantillon after having really impressed the brewery. He actually, it's a family brewery, very much a family brewery, and Joel took the whole family to see his Broadway show that he was doing, I guess it was 42nd Street. Is that right, Joel?
That's correct.
I can't sing any of that stuff.
He brought them all back to New York for the.
No, it was a traveling. You know.
Oh, it was on the road.
I was touring with 42nd
in Belgium.
Street. Joel's
Joel.
We were in a lot of countries. We're in Belgium at the moment. And
I thought Joel married his daughter, to get in the family.
Nah, Joel tried, but it didn't work.
And I actually had trouble with the law.
Yeah. But anyway, when Joel split, you know, the law shortly behind him, he brought this Cantillon back for us to drink. And it's always described as an acquired taste. But, of course, Will and I acquired it like, hey, that worked. Yeah.
You're right, Joel. This story is boring us.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. Don't point that.
Well, why don't you tell us something? All right, guys, we're going to regroup. Ray, yeah. We're here with the Shelton Brothers, SheltonBrothers.com. My favorite importers of beer in the whole world.
Uh-huh.
They have small productions, specialty, naturally made beers. Let's ask a different question. They don't want to talk about themselves. But we know that the brother Joel, who is a traveling musician, brought Cantillon to his brothers and said, this is a great beer. And somehow the light went off and they started an import company.
You know, I was actually at a tasting with these guys. At the Waterfront Ale House, and you guys brought up Cantillon. I was invited by a guy named Jim Leff, who was like this supreme foodie guy and a good friend.
What year was this, back in
this
the day?
This is probably about 1996, 95.
And it's also worth pointing out, I think, that Jim Leff, who was the founder of Chowhound. Chowhound, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is now chow.com, I guess.
Whatever. Or
Chow, yeah. Oh, it's important. But... Jim is a trombone player, just like Joel.
Correct.
That's right.
Yeah, and if we had both of them here, they could definitely do the entirety of 42nd Street. But yeah, on the vuvuzela.
We'll get Jim on another show.
Yeah,
we should.
So I was invited to a tasting, and that's the first time I met you guys. Was at the Waterfront Ale House, and we drank Cantillon. I had Cantillon for the very first time, and Sam put out like a cheese spread, and it was great. I loved it. I found it amazing the first time I tasted it. And not everybody loved it. There were people like looking at it like, what the fuck is this? And I thought it was fantastic.
It's unusual beer, but it's great. So what beers did you start importing after Cantillon?
Oh, there's my phone.
Should we turn our cell phones off? Actually, this is a call-in show, right?
Do you actually get calls? Do you get calls on your phone?
Yeah.
All right. Ted from Rhode Island.
I'm going to call you right now.
We can...
suck. The idea after we started bringing in Cantillon, which was it's worth a small diversion to tell most of that story. We kind of just decided, because no one else was doing it, to bring in Cantillon so we could drink it. And we ended up bringing in probably too much. And I first walked into the warehouse, actually. At that point, it was only me, this is Dan again, doing it. And it was very daunting to see 19 pallets stacked four high, you know, of Cantillon. And I brought my first shipment. I went out and saw it at the warehouse and nearly had a heart attack. Brought some of the beer back and went up to the roof of my Brooklyn apartment at that time. And with my girlfriend, we popped open the very first bottle of Cantillon imported by Shelton Brothers. It was the Creek, which is the most difficult one to appreciate. It's more sour, actually. And she just looked at me and said, how much of this do you have? And so it was very difficult to sell that first almost 20 pallets of Cantillon. And it became clear that I either had to quit my job and, you know, devote more time to it, or just give up. And it's one of those things, like, you know, call it fate, call it stupidity. I just decided to go out and find more beers to make this hopefully a viable enterprise. So I started traveling around just looking for beers. And I went first to France, actually, and then Belgium. Went to Germany and started getting further afield. And really, when you look at it, that kind of describes what happened to the company over, well, it's been 14 years now we've been doing it. It's just been a whole process of gathering beers.
And Dan, you know, I remember a time when you came back from Germany and you just had a slew of beers. And you came over to DBA on First Avenue and you had a ton of stuff. And that was the first time I ever had the Mars beer, and you had the unfiltered lager. And it really changed the way I looked at beer. It was just so good. It was so unremarkable in its balance and perfection. It was just... really great. It was a remarkable beer, and it still is a remarkable beer. But
I was going to remark on it. That just proves it's remarkable. The fact is, we have a bottle here, and the format here is that every time we score a beer, we're going to play the vuvuzelas here. if you don't mind.
Should I hit one?
Yeah, let's do it. Pop everybody, that sucker.
Everybody, come on, the whole group.
Yes, the fabulous Shelton Brothers.
We're very musical.
Things about them, because they brought more beers than we've ever had in the studio. There's over 20 beers here, and I think they think that they're going to drink them all, and I think that we could.
Enough with the talking. Let's get to the drinking.
All right, let's start drinking more.
What are we drinking right here?
What's the second beer? Yeah,
Let's actually talk about the first beer.
The first beer. Let's talk about the first beer.
I forgot the first beer.
We're way past it. Can any
of my younger brothers read the alcohol content on this bottle?
Not me.
I'm sorry, I don't have my eyes anymore.
Where is it?
Don't ever get old, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we're drinking two of their fabulous beers. What else can I say about them? Well, BR is their rep, and she's been on the show a few times. She knows a little bit of radio protocol. BR, tell us about some of the beers that we're drinking.
Well, we haven't opened it yet. We will get to the Mars, the unfiltered, the ungespundet Keller-style beer. Really rustic, fantastic. Lager from Bamberg, small brewing town in northern Bavaria in Franconia, where we actually have several beers from there that we really enjoy. It's a really, really great brewing town. Also got Epic Mayhem from New Zealand.
That's delicious.
That's like, I think, a 6.2%, I believe, on the Epic. We just started bringing these beers in. Started, I believe, in April. It was the first time we had them at the Craft Brewers Conference in Chicago in April. They should be hitting New York once the registrations come through, I would say, this summer. We'll be seeing some New Zealand beers here. And the first beer, it's actually a new one to me, so unfortunately I can't speak to it. It's from Spain, though, who just...
Well, we can't find the...
We can't read
the alcohol content on the bottle, but it is from Spain, and let's cheer for Spain today, beating Portugal.
Yeah, oh no!
Oh yeah! Come on! There we go. I like it. But
it's also the musical Shelton Brothers. So, yeah. Will, you're a trombone player, right? I mean, Joel, you're a trombone player, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I discovered Cantillon.
And you're the professional.
Should I tell you that story? No. We already...
And then Will, what is Will? I'll ask Joel. What does Will play? I know you guys are in some bands together.
Go ahead, Joel. Joel, you take that.
No, I'm tired of being in charge. You go ahead, Will.
All right. Yeah, we play in a band based in New York called Jesus H. Christ and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Joel, plays guitar. So you guys decided to come here and play the Vuvuzelas?
We play it all.
And have some fun. Rather than talking about beer. Well, guess what? We're going to have to take a break right now. It's Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you so much. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. That was Not Fade Away by the Rolling Stones. We're announcing the songs now. We're back on Beer Sessions Radio. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. They have a great app called Beer Cloud. You can learn more about beer through GreatBrewers.com. There's a question that we have from a viewer and...
Viewer?
A listener, excuse me. And this will be good for our group here today. We have, is there any such thing as a non-alcoholic craft beer? Is it sacrilegious of me to ask? Larry Taylor from Brooklyn. Now, have you guys ever imported a non-alcoholic beer?
Nope.
Do you ever intend to?
No.
No.
Well, here's, I hate to say this in a way, but alcohol is kind of essential to the flavor of beer. I mean, I would love it if you could drink great beer and not get drunk and not have hangover the next day, but it just doesn't work. Alcohol does play it has a big spot in the flavor profile, and if you take it out, things go to hell. So, although we're trying very, very much with this Guineo beer from Spain, like I was mentioning, it's called Riner. I think it's about 2.5. We couldn't find the alcohol content on the bottle, but it's about 2.5%, and that is a great example of a really flavorful, characterful beer that doesn't have a lot of alcohol. And you can probably drink that all day and never get in any kind of trouble whatsoever.
When's that going to be available in New York?
Well, it should be in the States. The big problem with New York, and we're trying to deal with this, is label registrations, which are very expensive. They make you basically register with the state every single label that you might sell. And
so that means if you have a brewery that makes 12 different styles of beer, every single style of beer that you want to sell in New York is going to be labeled separately.
Correct, or you just don't bother to sell it. And that's what happens to us usually. We just can't afford, obviously, 12. If you multiply that out, it's something,
what are they charging now?
It's $150 per label. So
it's gone up.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking a couple $1,000s here if a brewery had 12 different beers. And we know that people want these beers, but we just can't do that because obviously we can't make our money back.
And every state has its own bizarre laws, too, that you have to go by.
You don't want to get into it, but yeah.
Well, I think people are interested in that kind of thing.
Well, then you're really going to go over time because I think we didn't mention this, but I was a lawyer in my previous career. And right now we're actually busily suing several states over stupid beer-related laws. And actually right now we do have a case against the State Liquor Authority of New York. And maybe I'm not allowed to talk about that. I don't know. That's what they usually say is we can't talk about what's in litigation. But it's progressing well. And if hopefully when it's done, we'll get rid of these label registration fees. And then you guys can drink everything you
want.
That's
because a lot of
New York State.
A lot of states have a law where a brewery registers and whatever they make, they can sell. Is that kind of the standard across the country?
No. unfortunately, there's no standard at all. And that's why it's a huge job keeping track of the label laws or the alcohol beverage laws across the country. Everything is different, as you said.
Yeah, we have a full-time person who's her only job is to handle registering labels and getting our license in that state.
Wow, how do you get a job like that? That's a great gig.
Well, it's also she has to look good. That, by the way, is my wife who does this.
All right, so
the vagaries. I wanted to get back to the low alcohol. We actually, another one of our brewers, Mikkel from McKellar, his summer beer, his Drink in the Sun, which I think this year is even lower than last year, was around 3.2, and this year I believe is 2.7%. A lot of people think, in order to be flavorful, it's got to be higher in alcohol. But we've got these brewers who are doing lower in alcohol, like session-style beers, that whether it's 2.7 or a 4% British bitter, that they're really tasty. You can have a few pints at your local and still get on your bike and get back home.
Yeah, there's a big difference, though, between 4 and 2-something. Mars, that we mentioned a little bit earlier, also makes a light beer that's 2.8%.
And
that's
tastes just delicious. Fabulous. Yeah, it's a great beer.
But certainly that's one of our big things. I have my own brewery that I run in Massachusetts called High and Mighty, and my focus there is on lower alcohol.
Have you got a website for that?
highandmightybeer.com. And I think that's hugely important.
We paid a lot for that name also. Yeah. It was researched with all focus groups and everything.
I'm really, really big on that right now. I think it's hugely important, especially as brewing, especially in this country, but more and more in other countries, becomes more and more about bigger beer and about gimmickry.
I think that trend is kind of come to a head.
We can only hope.
Yeah, I think
you
it
wish.
Has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are people still talking about extreme beer, which is for some people the way to success. We actually sell some pretty extreme beers if you really believe there's such a thing. We sell, the strongest beer in the world at one point. But we're not big fans of that stuff. We're trying to really get the point across that what people should be paying for. There's this big idea. Beer drinkers often think that it's only worth paying a lot of money if you get a lot of alcohol, which I think is a very strange idea. But we're just arguing, whenever anybody asks us, you want to drink a beer that has character and flavor and doesn't get you totally plastered. And if it costs a lot of money to get it fresh and have it taste the way it should taste, that should be enough for you. But no, people still have this hang up. You know, if you look at, I won't mention any names, if you look at some beer rating websites, I didn't mention any names, they definitely, if you look at it, their list of the top 100 beers, 95 of them are Imperial Stouts, And I don't mind an Imperial Stout once in a while, but I think it was like a dessert beer that you would have. I don't even like dessert much, so I'll drink one of those every month or so. But what I like to drink all the time when I'm home is, we're obviously not keeping track of all the beers that we've got here, but we've gone through Tuatara Pilsner from New Zealand, which is, I think Ray would like that one especially. Ray likes a good Pilsner. That's an excellent, excellent damn Pilsner.
Is there any left in that bottle?
Yes, there is.
It's really good. We did a vegetarian beer dinner last month with Dan and the Tuatara. Is that how you say it? Tuatara Pilsner was a real hit. It was really great.
Yeah, well, I hope so. It was great. And, frankly, one of our favorite American beers is Will's Beer of the Gods. And unfortunately, this just goes to show how bad things are out there right now. That name is not taken as the irony is lost on people that keep going, how can it be the Beer of the Gods if it's not 10%, which is the way a lot of certain kinds of people think. And I really, we all really object to that. And we'd much rather sit and drink really refreshing, characterful beers, that don't get you trashed. I think I've said that enough times, but...
Yeah, well, there's no question. I was at a festival in Boston recently called Slow Fest, which was a slow food and so-called session beer festival. And I was on the speakers panel, and one of the questions was, how do you compete with 4% beers against much more complex beers like double IPAs and Imperial Stouts? And I said, no, wait a second. Those beers are nowhere near as complex as, say, a standard English bitter at 3.5% or a German Helles lager. Much, much more going on in those beers. But people get confused with the idea of flavor and alcohol.
The alcohol and the hops and all that malt hide a lot of sins.
Well, but they also, sure, there's a lot of stuff happening there, but that's not, there's a difference between flavor and complexity.
I agree.
Complexity is much more about the ingredients of the beer, which gets completely overwhelmed by the alcohol, and usually in American beer by the excess of hops, especially American hops.
Well, before the show, you mentioned the word small beer. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I don't know how you define that exactly, but small beer I think of as anything, say 4.5% or less, something where you can drink one or two of them and not feel like crap the next day. And this is one of the arguments I have. In fact, I have it with my brother sometimes, is this idea of what session beer is. And, most people talk about it in that with these beers, you can drink a lot more and not get as drunk. My feeling is you drink the same amount. You just drink the one or two beers, but you don't feel like shit that night. You don't make an ass of yourself. And you
can
still
get shit on the radio?
Ray said fuck earlier, so I think we
Did
can.
He?
Yeah. It's okay.
So my feeling is drink one or two beers, but if it's only 4%, you can actually not make an ass of yourself that night, and you can also get up in the morning and go to the gym or do whatever it is you're going to do without any of those ill effects that you would get from drinking that same one or two beers that is twice or three times the alcohol. Ray, you're up.
I got to say that I tasted this Tuatara Pilsner.
Tuatara.
Tuatara. And it's really, really good. Really subtle and lovely.
It's awesome.
But
it's about 4.5%.
But I was looking at trying to find out what the alcohol content was. I'm like, what's he talking about? It's 11.2%. It's the ounces.
Or
the
fluid ounces, yes. Let's not get into the labeling laws
any further. What's the next beer that we just tried? Special Rausch.
Special Rausch beer.
Oh, boy.
We skipped over.
What did we skip over? Oh, there's a bottle open there. Okay. We got the Rausch beer. We'll get the Beer of the Gods.
Well, it's actually pronounced Rauch beer. It's a German word. It means smoke beer. And this is actually not unrelated to the topic. The Bamberg, which is kind of known as the home and the temple of smoked beer, Bamberg in Germany, has two smoked beer breweries, both of which do their own malting right in the city. It's pretty remarkable. But there's one that you've heard of, Schlenkerla, that's often described by a certain class of person, let's call them beer geeks, as like the most the classic one, because it's just got it's smoke. I think I can say this, smoked up the ass. I mean, it literally, they put it in a big smoking, the malt in a big smoking machine, and they run smoke through it till it's just burnt to hell. And that, you know, in Bamberg, they describe it as being a beer for tourists. Now, across the river is Spezial, where I know Ray's been there.
A bunch of
times. We've all been here. And you know,
and we love the beer, especially our Rauch.
But the smoking that gets into this Rauch beer at Spezial is part of the kilning process. And I won't describe the brewing process. You guys have probably done that in several previous shows. But it is part of the process. So it's a natural smoke. It's not intense. Like you don't throw it in and smoke the crap out of it like they do other places. And so you get a subtle smoke and other great complex flavors right. from a great beer. And you'll sit there and you drink that, and often it's hard to get through. I mean, I like Schlenkerlau, for example, but I'll spend a lot more time at Spezial than I will at Schlenkerlau.
The Spezial, Rauch Weiss is really delicious. The wheat beer with this smoked malt. It's so subtle. It's not overpowering. It just adds this great complexity to it, especially when you drink it right at the brewery. It's so fresh and good.
Well, Spezial is also just one of the greatest places in the world to drink a beer.
It is.
You go there, especially if you can go there at like 8 in the morning and be there with all the...
I got engaged at 9 in the morning in Spezial, actually.
Aww.
That's a story I can tell, but you know, you get the picture. But another great place to drink a beer, by the way, is Mars, which is also in Bamberg. We already drank their Ungespuntetes Bier, which means... Well, it's too hard to explain what that means, but it's a Keller beer, as BR said. And I want to make sure we've covered all the beers we've drunk so far. And you think the beer of the gods hasn't really been given sufficient time?
I haven't tried it yet.
Talked about it yet.
Oh, let's, okay.
Let's pour some.
Well, yeah, have some.
Actually,
so this is the High and Mighty Brewery. And where you're still located? In Massachusetts?
Yeah, it's brewed in Massachusetts.
Hey, Will, tell them how you got the name High and Mighty.
Oh, no one cares about that.
Oh, that's a good story.
Is it?
But tell you what, we're going to take another break here. Beer Sessions Radio, we're going to take a little break, and we'll come back and talk about High and Mighty Brewery.
But you got to go home with me. I forgot some good old love, and then I got some in store. When I get through throwing it on you, you got to come back for more. Boys and things will come by the dozen, but that ain't nothing but drugstore loving. Pretty little thing, let me light your count, cause mama, I'm sure hard to hell and I yes around. Lighter than word, and I'm a man with a great experience. I know you got you another man, but I can love you better than him. Take my hand, don't be afraid, I wanna prove every word I say. I'm advertising love for free, so won't you place your ad with me? Boys will come a dime by the dozen, but that ain't nothing but 10 cent love. Pretty little thing, let me like to count, cause mama, I'm sure hard to hell and I yes around.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Got an interesting group of guests today, the Shelton Brothers, my favorite beer importers in the whole world. I learn more about beer from drinking their beer than any other way. But you can also go to greatbrewers.com and learn a little bit more about beer and education and everything else. We do a giveaway today, too. Heritage Meats, which is the parent of the Heritage Raider Network, has been doing a special promotion. That was a special beer you're going to hear about. The first caller to call in at 718-497-2128 is going to win some Heritage Pork. So give it a call, 718-497-2128. So Dan and Will Shelton, tell us more about your beers. We're talking about High and Mighty Brewery from Massachusetts. And I'm really proud of Will because I do like his beers a lot. I like Beer of the Gods and Purity of Essence, which are two great kind of German-style beers that you've made. Tell us a little more about how you named it High and Mighty, or why.
It was, I guess we can go ahead and mention Beer Advocate, our good friends over there.
we've not always gotten along with them exactly. And at one point we had a...
They like ahead. Extreme beer.
Yeah.
In a way that we just don't. Yeah.
But that's not really the point. At one point we were having just a little feud about a certain beer. We're not going to talk about which beer it was. And actually it was one of our employees who actually posted something. And Todd, the guy at Beer Advocate, sent out a post saying that he was sick and tired of all this high and mighty Shelton Brothers bullshit. And my brother and I disagree about who came up with the idea for that as a name for a brewery. But my recollection is that we both, the light went off for both of us and said, hey, if we ever get a brewery, it's going to have to be called High and Mighty.
I never heard that story before.
No, it's true.
The funny thing is when I first met you guys, it was the first beer I tried was the High and Mighty Beer of the Gods. And when I met you guys, it made sense. So.
Well, right. A lot of people don't get that. Obviously, it's all intended to be kind of tongue in cheek. You know, people with a name High and Mighty or a name Beer of the Gods are expecting, for whatever reason, big huge beer, and that's just not what we're about at all.
Mm-hmm. So are you guys in every state right now?
We're in 45, yeah, 46, right. Something like that.
So since you have so many beers and they're all limited, I mean, what I like to do is if I go into a beer shop or a bar, if I see something that says Shelton Brothers, I'll order it no matter what, and maybe narrow it down by style or alcohol level.
We believe
is that a good way to shop for your beers?
So you're the guy. Jimmy's putting our kids through college, man.
You know, look for SheltonBrothers.com. Find the style you like. You want something stronger or lighter. And the session beers, this next beer is what? It's the Saison. What?
I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, Jimmy, you want to please
tell me
French? Actually, BR should do this probably. She's the best.
BR is the best pronunciator of everybody.
This is from a small Belgian brewery, Blaugie, and it's their Saison des Potres. And épotre means spelt in French.
That doesn't tell you a lot, does it? Spelt, as you may know, is sort of a primitive form of wheat, which was commonly used in saison beers in Belgium. We can't get into what saison is all about, I guess, but it's a remarkable, wonderful style of beer, and this is our favorite. Although I think it may suit, and there are some good, you know, people know Saison Dupont, for example, which is a good beer. I prefer this one myself. But there's also there's one coming along that may replace them all, which is from the Duranka Brewery.
Oh, we love Duranka, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I think we've got a bottle of that, too.
Got a bottle of everything here, I think.
Yeah, actually. We got their XX Bitter somewhere, don't we? But they're making something called Saison de Dauphiné. Dauphiné is the town where they're located now. And it's an awesome Saison with a typical Duranka hop profile.
Is Yvonne,
really hoppy.
Is Yvonne working on that?
No, Yvonne is not involved with them anymore. Yvonne started his own brewery, of course. Yvonne is a friend of ours from way back, a friend of Ray's and a friend of all of ours. I mean, he's just a great, great man. He lives in Brussels. He's started his own brewery called Brasserie de la Seine. Brasserie de la Seine refers to the Seine River, which runs through Brussels, or actually more like under Brussels. You never see it. It's like a sewer, actually, more than a river. But that's Brussels, you know. Brussels is a cool. Brussels is very closely related to New York, actually, style-wise. Anyway,
but getting back to the beer we're tasting right now, which is the Saison des Potres, it's from a tiny, tiny little brewery. It's literally brewed in the garage at this family's house, which is just on the border with France in the south of Belgium. And it's primarily brewed to be served in the cafe that they own across the street.
Which is lovely.
Yeah. And it's just, they're just the most wonderful people you've ever met. It's a husband and wife and their son, Kevin. And for years, Marie-Noël, the wife, was doing the brewing. Kevin is now doing the brewing.
Do they still brew in the garage across the street?
Exactly right.
And then they come with a forklift to bring the beer to the Quonset hut that they have set up?
It's a tractor.
Then
they load it up and they take the spent grains, which immediately go out to the pigs and the cows in the fields. Because this is a classic farmhouse brewery, which is what we all kind of idealize.
But I got to say something. I've got to say that. How do you pronounce it, Will?
The brewery or the beer?
The beer. This
the beer. I pronounce love this Saison des Potres.
Okay, but nobody's ever going to understand what this beer looks like. If you saw the label, you would not pronounce it that way. And as an American,
it would say Saison des Potres
or des Potres. Which is totally wrong. But
let's not get into all the things Americans can do to a simple French word.
People should seek this beer out. It's one of my favorite beers, and they should understand that it's a long word.
It's truly awesome.
Saison d'epaure. It's just a great beer, and you should.
Can you say that again, Ray?
I can't. I won't do it unless you pay me.
People are putting their fingers up their nose right now out there in Radio Land, trying to figure out what the hell Ray's talking about. But it's French, yeah. But it and the brewery is named Blougy. It looks to Americans like Blougies. Try to repress that impulse, but Blougy, Brasserie de Blougy in Belgium. Check it out. It's really great. The bottles look like they're made, you know, in someone's house, in someone's garage, and stored down in their basement. And there's yeast sticking to the sides of the bottles. It's all, and the labels are put on crooked and all this kind of stuff. It's your classic saison.
It's all done by him. And I guess we should also point out, when you do buy one, and we know you will, be careful, because these bottles are heavily carbonated, and the corks will fly out of there. And you could put an eye out.
And there's just tons of expensive equipment in this room. I was really afraid that we were going to hurt someone and get sued for damages.
So you like our little Heritage Radio Network.
So I got a question, boys. So what's the availability of this stuff going to be for us? I mean, I see it once in a while, and then it's gone. And I usually hide it away and drink it myself. Is it going to be more consistent availability for this Blagis?
It can always be consistent, and it ought to be. But, you know, the business we are in is a very strange, rarefied one where people just don't think it's available, so they don't bother to order it. Then, you know, people just forget. So we actually have beer sitting in the warehouse all the time.
I order it every week almost.
Well, one of the problems we have is we're dealing with breweries that are literally brewing their beer in a garage.
Well,
competing with breweries with huge marketing advertising budgets. So most people have never heard of these things, which is just a real shame that they do hear about a beer like, I don't know, let's just call it Delirium Tremens, which is just total shite. But everyone, you know, knows about... Oh, sorry.
We didn't say that. Roll that tape back, please.
Shit. All right. You know, it's got the nice elephants and all that. But the beer itself is just really uninteresting. But there's so much money behind it that these breweries cannot possibly compete with it. So people think it's not available, but it's just that they don't know.
I actually know about this stuff, and I actually do request it, and I find out that it's not in inventory. So who's ordering?
It's not an inventory at the distributor's place, but it's in our warehouse, and we're paying money to keep it there.
I would love to sell more, or just drink more.
I would. Let's talk after the show, Ray.
Okay.
I like the cut of your jib, Ray.
Let's keep this personal, shall we?
You know, people always want to know how bar owners do it, how they start bars. This is part of it. You know, you find beers you love, and you got to try to order them. And we can't keep you know thousands of bottles in our bar sellers and all that. So there's this very fine balance between really good quality specialty importers like the Shelton Brothers, the very small breweries that they work with, and all these great good beer sealed bars in New York and around the country. So it's what we're trying to say is the beers that we're drinking now, you know, you really have to appreciate how hard it is for us to get them and for you to get them. So I would say when you see them, buy them and drink them. And write into us at beersessions@gmail.com and tell us your favorite Shelton Brothers beers. That's a good competition. Whoever has the...
Tell us your favorite Shelton Brothers.
Write in and tell us about the favorite Shelton Brothers beers. We know the brothers are quirky, but we love them. So let's do a couple more beers before we close out. I think we're gonna get a little more time tonight. We usually close out after about 45 minutes, but I think we can do, you know, a couple more beers. So what's the last beer that we just had, BR? We want to tell everyone what these beers are, what they're missing, and how they can learn more about Shelton Brothers beers. But you guys have a great website, too, sheltonbrothers.com. I mean, every beer that you have is listed on your website, and there's information about it. I think it's really impressive, and it's always updated.
We're totally changing it. We don't like it. But it will be the best beer website in the history of the world very soon. Don't hold your breath, but very soon. And I should also mention, by the way, that speaking of how we started and all that sort of thing, which obviously we don't want to do, we had in Philadelphia for Philadelphia Beer Week or Philly Beer Week, the three most important Lambic brewers currently working in Belgium, Jean Vanois from Cantillon, Armand de Belder from Driefontein, and Frank Bone from Bone, which Americans call Boone, whatever it's pronounced Bone. And we called the Lambic Summit. We talked about this style of beer and different political things between different... It's a really complex political issue, Lambic beer. That will be... That whole thing is 3 hours long. in 10-minute segments, whatever YouTube allows, we're going to have that entire session up on the web for people to read. And go to sheltonbrothers.com. No dots, no points, no underscores, nothing. Just Shelton Brothers, spelled out, .com. And keep an eye on that and try to catch every damn session of the Lambic Summit, which was a great event.
Ray, were you down there for that?
I was not. I was down for the Lambic dinner at Tom Peters' wonderful Monk's Cafe.
Sour beers are really hot right now. I mean, at Jimmy's Number 43, we've done almost every month a very successful sour or Lambic beer tasting. BR's been in on a lot of them, and so it seems to be, talking about the small beer as opposed to, you know, double IPAs, why do you think that more and more people are getting interested in, you know, sours and Lambics?
Well, I actually want Joel to talk about this a little bit. I mean, Joel obviously is the guy that discovered Cantillon for us, and the rest of the world, let's face it. But the my personal view is that sour beer, it puts you, when you drink sour beer, it puts you in touch with thousands of years of human history, because all beer was sour. That's just the way it was. It was all fermented by wild yeast, because people didn't know what yeast was, so they didn't actually culture yeast until Louis Pasteur came along. Let's put a plug in for the French while we're at it. But yeah, every beer was sour, and so when you drink sour beer, I think it appeals to you on a very basic level. You can't describe it, but it's just an animal level, let's say.
Damn, I thought I was going to talk about this.
Yeah, but I think you will. But I want to say, first off,
that's not Will. That's Joel.
That's Joel. We sound very similar.
We all sound similar, but one of us talks more.
We have the same parents.
Supposedly.
But Joel, tell us about Lambics.
And tell us about South Africa, Joel.
Oh, okay. I think Dan was leading to this. I just came back from South Africa for the World Cup, and I had some sorghum beer from the Zulus. And I had no idea what it tasted like until I tried it, obviously. And it's the closest thing to the beers we have would be Lambic, oddly enough. And I think when you have sour products, it's the closest thing to real fermentation that's not covered up by other things. It's not filtered and changed to suit the average palate. It tastes what fermentation really tastes like. And I think more and more people are realizing that's what fermentation really is. And cheese, certain kinds of food, all these things have a similarity. And I think most people will never understand that. But maybe more and more of us are understanding that, and it's a certain taste that's very funky and very sour, and that's what it's supposed to be like when the nature just acts on something naturally. And I was very impressed with the Zulu beer, and I don't know if we can ever bring it over, but maybe we can try to make some. Maybe Will can try to make some. I'm in Holyoke, Mass.
I'd love to. That's right.
Yeah.
Will's part Zulu, yeah.
which part?
But I want to also point out that Shelton Brothers are, above all else, dedicated to beer as part of a healthy lifestyle. And so as we sit here in the craft beer sessions Taj Mahal with a stuffed boar head over us, I want to point out that all three Shelton brothers and BR are vegetarians. And we are really, as you see, trying to push this idea of not, you know, drinking lots of beer is good for you, but not the alcoholic beer, you know. Drink stuff that gives you that beer flavor, and sourness being part of the great profile of a great beer.
One but reason not being alcohol. Because it's generally, if it's sour, it's probably beer that's been fully fermented, meaning there's not a lot of residual sugar, right. Which is also true of beer that's not sweet.
And right now we're drinking this.
And this beer we're drinking right now is incredible, and I've never had it until right now, and I'm freaking out.
I'm loving it.
On the radio.
PR, would you read the label to us, please?
I will read, and this is kind of putting me on the spot, because it's one of our new breweries from Switzerland, which I actually haven't had this before.
That beer just arrived in the country this week.
It's that's why I haven't had it. It's from the Bière Trois Dames, the Three Ladies, Three Women Brewery from Switzerland. This is their Grande Dame, which is a Belgian style of an Oud Brun, which is, that's why you get that nice, fantastic tartness to it, and none of the sweetness that you get from some other old browns, Flemish reds, like Rodenbach, which now
are pasteurized. So this is a New York City premiere. Is this
true? It
is
indeed. On the radio premiere.
Oh, exactly. Right. Let's say the name one more
get
time.
Get us arrested, Jimmy.
It's no, we're on the radio here, guys.
This beer's registered. I swear it's registered.
We're on the radio. We can drink whatever we want from anywhere in the world.
SLA, if you're out there, this beer's registered, I'm sure.
By the way, we're broadcasting from New Jersey.
This is Pirate Radio, Pirate Beer Radio. But the Trois Dames Brewery from Switzerland. This is a little bit of a funny story. The original labels for all their beers were actually, they're painted. Their painting's done by the brewer, who's, you know, typical Swiss artiste. And all of them were pictures of women in different ways, you know, to describe each beer. And the one for this one, the Oud Brown, which that's the Flemish pronunciation, that's the typical pronunciation, or, you know, Vie Brun, which is French, it had a picture of a black woman. And we took a poll at Shelton Brothers, and everybody said, no, the picture of the black woman, though attractive, was not going to really fly very well in the U.S. So we actually, Will, I think, came up with the Grand, or did I?
No, that was your idea.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, the Grand Dame.
See, I'm willing to admit it.
It's actually typical for this style. It has a fair amount of acetic acid, which is vinegar flavor, which it's not too much, but that's
in a
that's,
good way.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. And we all the Shelton brothers, I don't know anybody else here, we kind of grew up drinking vinegar. We all like vinegar. We like sour, we like bitter, we like those kind of hard to like flavors.
Yeah, your problem is that so many sour beers you get right now taste so much like vinegar that my feeling is I would much rather just go to the supermarket and spend $1.99 on a bottle of Heinz than to spend $20 on their cork finished bottle that to me is almost indistinguishable.
Okay, one last beer. We always talk about one of our favorite breweries, Jolly Pumpkin.
Oh yeah.
How
oh,
did
yeah.
you meet them, and tell us a little bit about them before we close out?
Do we have any Jolly Pumpkin here?
We know about it. We talk about it all the time on the show.
Close enough.
More sour beer, of course. And Joel, you want to talk about
but
it?
It's less sour.
Ron is a genius,
like,
and if I was gay, I would totally be gay for Ron.
But it's like it's a less sour.
Ron's
beer.
A vegetarian, also, by the way.
He's vegan.
But guys, actually. Jolly Pumpkin. I think Jolly Pumpkin is more of like this balanced beer, where there's like a little sourness, but it's kind of natural.
Well, here's the thing about this. I mean, I talked before about the Rauch beer from Bamberg, and how, you know, there are ways that you can do it that are part of a natural process. Or you can just smoke the crap out of it, you know, in a sort of unnatural way and get lots more smoke, which a lot of Americans would go, wow, the more there is of something, you know, the more authentic it is, the more classic it is. But the Jolly Pumpkin, unlike every other beer, as far as I know, I shouldn't say this because I don't know for sure, but I think every other beer that's sour, there's a lot of sour beer now in the U.S., and I want to take some credit for getting the sour beer idea out there 14 years ago, which is, it's going nuts, but
I think you did, and you're really influencing a lot of people. Like I said, the sour beer tastings are really popular right now. We're going to do a couple, you know, goodbyes. We're going to say, we're coming to the end of this episode of Beer Sessions Radio. I'd like to send a thank you to our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. And check out Good Brew Seal, goodbrewseal.com, because this will be July Good Beer Month in New York City. Woo! You can also find Beer Sessions on Facebook, friend us, and talk about tonight's episode. Thanks to my co-host, Ray Dieter. I'm Jimmy Carboni, executive producer. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and the engineer, Nat Wiener. Good night, and we will see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song.